Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown Match Day 14 Recap Podcast. I'm Sam Leveridge and I'm joined today by Rory Barlow. How are you doing, Rory?
Yeah, I'm well. I'm not too bad. It seemed like we were drifting to a relatively quiet weekend in La Liga, but that couldn't do, could it, Sam? It had to have a twist at the end, didn't it?
Yeah, I think the La Liga gods have seen that you've been off to Rome recently and couldn't let you be dragged away by Serie A. So they have to throw up some drama late on Sunday night just to make everything a bit more interesting. But let's start off with the headline story, Rory, which was obviously the return of Xavi to Barcelona. I mean, you're a Barcelona fan. I mean, how excited were you for the game this weekend?
I sort of cleared the room. I had it on the big TV. Everything was set. There was certainly a sense of anticipation, and you saw that hours before the game. Fans turning up, flares. It looked like a proper sort of football club that was sure of itself. The fans wanted to be there. The attendance was almost double what it was against Alaves recently, which kind of really shows you the effect that Xavi can have on the club. In a way, I'm almost glad this game didn't go swimmingly well, because it puts the brakes on things a little bit and it sort of reminds everyone of the task at hand here.
Now, that has to be the most optimistic Barcelona fan to say they're happy with a disappointing 1-0 win.
Yeah, it is pretty grim times, as you can tell.
Yeah, so let's jump into that then, because you spoke to Roman, your fellow Gule. So let's just listen in to the winning goal, the penalty, controversial penalty, and hear what you and Roman had to say about the game. Memphis, viene el Barça. Diego López entre palos, Memphis. Gol, 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 de Memphis. Gol del Barça. Fuerte y a la izquierda del portero le engaña.
A first win for Xavi in the opening game of his tenure against Espanyol in El Derbi de Barcelona. I'm joined by Roman de Arquer, who has kindly given up some of his Sunday morning to chat about it with us. How are you doing, Roman?
Hi, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty happy to finally see Xavi debut at the Camp Nou with Barcelona. I mean, it's something we needed. And as a matter of fact, I was able to go to the stadium to watch that game, and you could just feel, that the crowd, the people were so excited about this game. It was a different atmosphere, completely different. Before the game, people were already waiting for the players, for Xavi, chanting, jumping, shouting. During the game also, everyone was really excited. Also, lots of chants of Xavi, that kind of stuff, So you can tell people are excited once again and are looking forward to this new tenure with Xavi in charge.
Barcelona got their first win after a sort of very contentious Memphis Depay penalty. They were pretty good for the first sort of hour, I thought. Not so much in the last half hour, the last 20 minutes, certainly. What did you make of Xavi's first match? What were your first impressions? And did we see anything different from them?
Well, I mean, I thought it was a decent game, especially the first 30 minutes or so. I thought Barca was dominating pretty well. Espanyol were weren't looking to have the ball clearly. They wanted to wait at the back to try and defend their goal, and maybe in the second half look for those opportunities which they actually found. But overall, I think the dominance from the game was clearly from Barcelona. I wouldn't say there was much of a change, but I mean, there was intention of having the ball, of trying to press higher up, recovering it as quick as possible. But of course, it's hard to keep up that rate during the whole 90 minutes. So of course, in the second half, the team struggled a bit more. They were maybe lacking that consistency they were showing in the first half. I'm not sure if it's physical, if it's a matter of tactics or what, although Xavi did say that it wasn't really a physical matter. It was more in terms of that they had to work on keeping the team, you know, concentrated during the whole game. But overall, I think it was a decent start. It could have been a draw, clearly, because Espanyol were also quite decent. They had some very good chances through Raúl de Tomás, but thankfully, this time luck was on Barca's side, something they've been lacking during the whole season. So in this sense, it's good to start off with a victory, 3 points for Xavi, and especially against a rival such as Espanyol.
Yeah, and a lot. Nico went off, as did Busquets. Gavi was also substituted at one stage. This is a thin Barcelona squad, and Dani Alves is so far the only reinforcement that we can see being brought in. He's 38. He obviously comes from Sao Paulo. He hasn't played since September, when his contract was mutually terminated. He can't play until January. What exactly do you think Barcelona are looking to get from Dani Alves between now and the end of the season?
Well, in the press conference before the game, Xavi was obviously asked about Dani Alves, why he decided to accept him into the team. And a word he kept using with him and overall with his whole discourse was being positive, you know, positivism. He was really convinced that Dani Alves could bring that positivity into the dressing room towards the players, especially so many young players, as you mentioned, like Nico, Gabi, etc. And also, of course, he has lots of experience. He knows what it's like to win at a big club, and especially or particularly at Barcelona. And he also said that physically, Dani Alves did his medical test and all that, and he was perfect. You know, he's in great shape. He's still capable of playing at the highest level. And so it's just a matter of seeing how he actually does at the club. He won't be able to debut until January. But from there on, I'm sure we'll see him quite a lot, because, to be honest, none of the right back options are very convincing at the moment, with Mingueza, who for me was probably the poorest Barca player yesterday. On the game against Barça, Espanyol. And then you have Sergio Roberto, who isn't really an ideal option either, and Sergiño Dest, who's maybe disappointed a bit, and a bit more was expected. So I'm sure Dani Alves is going to get lots of chances in this game and in this team, we should say, better. And so I do think it's a decent option, you know, to keep in mind, to have there. And if he doesn't do well, I mean, in the end, they're paying him the actual bare minimum they can pay to a player, so you're not wasting too much money. So I think it's worth the risk, worth the taking the chance, and making Dani Alves try and motivate his fellow teammates and himself, because you could see he's extremely looking forward to playing and returning to Barcelona. So I think in the end, even if it doesn't go too well, we won't be losing too much, you know. So it's a risk worth taking, I'd say.
Dani Alves brings back the good crazy, as he would say. It was a bit of a mental end to that game, with Espanyol hitting the post twice. Nani de Mata missed a really golden opportunity. Just a kind of a quick word on Espanyol. What did you make of them and their game? Because they didn't look bad, but they were pretty conservative initially and had the chances to certainly take something from the game.
Yeah, I actually was quite surprised to see that they decided to wait behind so much in the first half, seeing how they created a lot of danger, you know, in the second half. When they needed that goal, they pushed forward. Raúl de Tomás, he was really good for them. He had those hit the post twice, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And he generated danger, and Espanyol overall, you know, were capable of having the ball. Darder was also fantastic in that midfield. He was the metronome for Espanyol in that game, and I thought that with these two guys inspired, they could actually do much more. But for some reason, Vicente Moreno decided to kind of wait it out and try and get a late goal, and in the end it didn't work out for them, you know. But Espanyol have proven this season that they're a very good team, you know. They took them a bit to get into action. The beginning of the season, they were struggling a bit, but now they're getting results and they're in a comfortable position, I'd say, in the standings. And they have quality, honestly, to save themselves comfortably and to push for the top mid-table, I'd say, because the team is decent and the quality is there. You know, it's just a matter of maybe being braver. I know it's a derby against Barcelona, the Camp Nou. That, of course, gives a lot of respect, you know, for teams going there. But sometimes it's worth being brave, and I think it would have paid off for Espanyol.
One team that showed Barcelona very little respect in the first tie was Benfica when they played them in the Champions League. They beat them 3-0 in the Estadio de Luz. This is such a key game for Barcelona, and sensations won't really cut it. This is the game that Barcelona and Xavi have to win in the sort of short term. What do you make of their prospects in this match against a Benfica side that looked pretty good and until sort of the 75th minute or so were competing with Bayern in the last match as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be easy. It's possibly going to be even tougher than the game against Espanyol. And also, Xavi's had little time, you know, so he's not going to be able to change much because of a game you play on Saturday, then the next one a few days later. So, and it's also taken into account that we might have some further setbacks with maybe Nico or Busquets or those guys or Mingueza who didn't finish the match. So we have to see whether they're going to be available, added up to all the injuries we already have. It's going to be tough and anything can really happen. But I mean, I still trust this team. There's still a lot of quality. And I think they can still actually win at home in the Camp Nou with the fans. If we have a similar attendance than we had with the Espanyol game, I think that would be very, very positive. But also, let's not forget that here in this game, Abde, who was fantastic against Espanyol, he won't be able to play because he hasn't been signed up for the Champions League. And Ilias, who was the other kid who started in that wide position, he won't be able to play either because he was suspended in the Champions League youth game, so that affects also top tier level. So that's very unfortunate. It's going to be complicated. I mean, there's so many setbacks, but I mean, a 1-0 win again counts. We still got quality players with Gavi, with Memphis, Frenkie de Jong, etc., and they have to, you know, step up and do the best they can, because a defeat or getting knocked out basically in the Champions League would be a massive blow. Not for Xavi as much, but for Barca, you know, for their economy, for their status, for what they want to appear and achieve. So, I mean, it would be terrible. So they have to do whatever they can. And as I said, it won't be easy at all.
Certainly as close to must-win territory as you can get at this stage of the season. I shall let you go and enjoy your Sunday morning, Roman. But thank you very much for attending us once again and for your brilliant insight.
Thank you very much and see you soon.
Thanks, Roman. Thanks, Rory. So, yeah, kind of a positive win for Barcelona that they might have hoped for more, but a good result nonetheless. 3 points on the board, but maybe it was a little bit more bittersweet seeing the result the next day on Sunday as Real Madrid went to Granada. I mean, this is the kind of fixture that Real Madrid haven't necessarily been at their best in recent years, but they thrashed Granada 4-1 and that put us on top of La Liga at match day 14. I mean, how long do we think that Real Madrid can stay there, Rory?
Well, it could be a while. Nobody really looks like taking top spot off them for some time. I think it'll be interesting to see them come up against some of the more difficult teams in La Liga. I do think their run's been relatively, I don't want to say easy of late, but it's not been the most difficult. I think for me, Real Madrid, they are starting to get into the habit of winning games comfortably. And if you look across La Liga, it's one of the tightest leagues in a long time, and we've said that, we've praised it, it's fun, it's exciting. But the fact that Real Madrid are able to sort of coast to a 4-1 win without really stretching their legs too much is a really positive sign for them. And we've seen this with Ancelotti teams before, where they kind of start off really well, it's all going swimmingly. But in this league, if you get out to a proper lead and you sort of put some distance between yourself and the chasing pack, that might be enough for Ancelotti this year. His big, I don't want to say weakness, because he's got a very good CV and he's won a lot of leagues, but the largest blot on his copybook, so to speak, is his perhaps record in winning leagues with title-winning squads, shall we say. And so if he can get out to that lead, that could really go some way to securing the title for them already.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at it and looking at the next 3 weeks in particular, I mean, against Granada they were very impressive, and I think one thing to highlight from that Granada win as well was the four goals had assists from the three midfielders. Toni Kroos got two, Luka Modric and Casemiro. And obviously that's a big factor for Real Madrid, having those three back at their best. I mean, it seems like they never age, but to have those three at the top of their game, they're better than any other La Liga midfield by some distance. So I think that's a big factor. But then, I mean, looking at the next 3-4 weeks, I mean, they've got Sheriff in the Champions League in midweek, which should be an easy game for them, but we saw how much they struggled at home and lost to Sheriff, so maybe it won't be as easy as we expect. And then the same day, we've got Karim Benzema's court case in France over the blackmail situation going on there, so that could throw a spanner in the works if things don't go as they're expecting. But then after that, I mean, they've got Sevilla at home, Real Sociedad away, Inter Milan in the Champions League, followed by Atletico Madrid at the Bernabeu. I mean, they're four very tough games that they're going to have to get good results from. I mean, going back to that point on the midfield, I mean, these guys are good, but they are getting older. Can they perform like that 90 minutes, two times a week for the next few weeks? I mean, we're getting into the crunch time of the season now. I mean, if Real Madrid can come through into kind of late December with the lead in the Liga, I think they'll probably be able to see it through and almost certainly, I'd say, be champions come the end of the season. But any slip up in those few games and the confidence starts to wobble and there's a few doubts and question marks, and I think maybe they could come unstuck. I mean, it's so tight at the top of La Liga as things stand at the moment. I mean, 14 games played and there's 4 points between the top four. I mean, it's been some time since we've seen so many teams up in contention, isn't it?
Definitely. I'd agree with all that. My one perhaps doubt is with sort of the other title contenders in the top four you mentioned there, Real Sociedad. They drew against Valencia today. We'll come on to that. But I'm not sure they have the depth. As much as I want to believe it, I think everyone wants to have them in and around that race. It's a really tough ask for Imanol Aguacil and Real Sociedad to be in and around it. Sevilla, we've seen they do have the talent. They've got the manager to make it all the way to the end of the season. But whether they can do that two seasons in a row, I don't think there's enough to say that they've dramatically improved. Maybe not necessarily their squad, but they're starting 11 this season. And they don't look better to me at this point, just to be bluntly honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. That, I mean, the two draws for this weekend for Sevilla and for Real Sociedad, I mean, they got up against teams who play very different football, very physical, very direct. I think that causes problems for both teams. I mean, these are the games where they need to be coming out with points if they are going to mount a title challenge, and it's been kind of where they've fallen away in the last couple of years, and I think we're seeing it now as well. I mean, obviously injuries are starting to play a factor and tired legs as well. I mean, I think where these teams could blow sides away earlier on in the season, they're struggling to do that now, and I think this is maybe where the quality, I mean, Atletico Madrid this weekend needed the 87th minute winner from Felipe, but that's where we see the Atletico Madrid, maybe even the Barcelona has some of that experience and star quality in their squad that will help grind out those results, while Real Sociedad and Sevilla haven't quite cut that elite level to be in a title challenge. I mean, that would be kind of my takeaway from this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I was astounded to see that Rafa Mir is actually outperforming his XG by about 0.3, which is news to me because he's missed some really good chances for my money. They don't have a source of goals. I mean, their goal right at the end against Alaves is Rakitic. The ball falls to him in the box. And yeah, okay, they did have chances before that, and Rakitic probably should have scored one before that. But it's a goal that sort of breaks to you, and it comes from being in and around the area. But at the same time, that's not a sort of a consistent, reliable source of goals you can get. And they just, they don't convince me. To put it, very simplistically, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly fair assessment. I mean, just touching back on Atletico Madrid, because, I mean, they did get the 3 points, but, again, we've kind of had this feeling with Atleti in the last few weeks that they're grinding out just about enough results, but other than that, they're not really at the top of their game. I mean, this was almost trademark 2013-14 Atleti with the set-piece late-headed winner rather than last season's Atleti, which was very free-flowing and dynamic. I mean, do you think it's just kind of the squad getting a bit worn out? I mean, we're starting to see kind of the problems of the lack of depth in their squad. I mean, Vasalico started and was replaced by Carlos Martin, the young right-back, with Trippier out injured, and Marcos Llorente just coming back, a few different knocks around the squad as well. Do you think that Atleti can kind of recover their best form, or are we going to see them continue to pick up points but without ever really challenging the top dogs?
I certainly think they're capable. I do think we mentioned this at the start of the season, they just don't have any depth in defence. They basically don't have any fullbacks at the minute. I mean, Carrasco's playing left wing back, and that works in that specific system, but it's not interchangeable if you want to change that. Renan Lodi, again, as much as he can be effective going forward, Simeone very clearly does not trust him in a back four as the left back. And yeah, you take Versalco out and you don't have another sort of out and out proven option. That, I think, is playing a part. I think Llorente coming back will really help them, because he just covers so much ground that he makes the pitch smaller for the other team, essentially. And that really helps when they're defending, which is really their big issue at the minute. And it's really surprising that Atleti, and in particular Simeone, have allowed themselves to be this short at the back, given where they've come from. And you mentioned 13-14 in that season. I'm imagining the 1-0 wins then, even though they weren't necessarily that convincing, inspired you with a lot more confidence than they are now.
Yeah, I don't think you can be too confident, even after his heroics this weekend with Felipe in central defence. I think his performances of late are always going to leave you on edge. But let's leave it there for the top dogs in La Liga, and let's go to a quick break before we look at the bottom half of La Liga, where we had plenty of drama this weekend, some surprises as well, both good and bad. So stay tuned, and we'll be back shortly with the rest of the action from Matchday 14.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to La Liga Lowdown Matchday 14 recap. And so let's start off in the second half with the late drama on Sunday night, as it was announced by Elche that they'd sacked coach Fran Escriba. He was in his second spell at the club. And I mean, it came as a bit of a surprise to me, at least. I mean, looking at Elche, I mean, they dropped into the relegation zone with a really abysmal 3-0 home defeat to Real Betis. And the first half in particular was pretty shambolic. But I mean, Elche haven't really been that bad this season, have they, Rory?
Not for me, no. And yeah, okay, it was a grim first half, but you don't sack a manager for the first half. And their run of form isn't bad enough to suggest a sacking for me. I wonder if... I mean, I should say I did look at the comments below the Elche announcement, and a lot of them did actually say, thanks, Fran Escriba, you're a legend, blah, blah, blah. But this was time, this had to happen, which surprised me a lot. I have to say. I don't think that they necessarily have the quality to be sort of towards the middle of the table, maybe. I mean, they're a point off safety, which is not too far from where they are aiming to be. So to sack them at this point.
Survival on the final day, it seems a strange call, but I guess the start of the season, obviously, they got some points against Sevilla, Athletic. They're pretty impressive against Atleti as well. I mean, I guess it's the last couple of weeks where they've gone off a little bit. I mean, the defeat to Alaves was obviously a blow. But, I mean, against Real Madrid, they weren't bad. Against Mallorca, it was only a last-minute equaliser from Mallorca. I mean, it does seem like results haven't been going their way, but it does seem harsh. So let's listen in to Keith Farnan, our resident Elche fan, who sent us his thoughts on the decision.
So the news that every Elche fan has been dreading has finally come true, and it's a very, very painful bit of news too. Fran Escriba has been sacked by the club after a 3-0 loss at home to Real Betis. It was an appalling early performance anyway, the first half hour, potentially the worst performance I've seen in a half hour space by any La Liga club in the last couple of years, definitely this season. And it's resulted in Fran Escriba losing his job after not even a full year at the club. The club that he's loved and adored in. And it's a sad day. Fran obviously knew the club very well. He came in last season and he saved us incredibly, pulled off the great escape. You know, we're left 18th this season on goal difference. Every game we're competitive. We may not win a lot of games, but by the same token, you know, we're always competitive and we're always in games. We just can't get over the line. Tonight, this game against Real Betis, it was only the second game we've lost by more than a goal, the other being the Villarreal game. It just feels like there was an air of inevitability about it, but myself and other Elche fans are very, very confused, because while we can see the point of view that it's definitely what could be seen as the right option to the board, it never felt like they wanted Fran Escriba. Even back when they sacked Pacheta after the sensational promotion story, it was for Jorge Almirón when Escriba was available. And it was only when things went really bad and the fans weren't happy with the board that they went and they got club legend Fran Escriba, the best manager I've ever seen manage a club, the best manager that most people have ever seen manage the club. But it was never a case of that's who they wanted. It was more of a case of, well, it will appease the fans and he knows the club. If we go down with Fran Escriba, at least the fans will have someone that can kind of be trusted. So it never properly felt like the board really wanted Fran, and which is really, really sad. And it became very apparent to me in the summer transfer window. Obviously a couple of good signings, etc. But the squad is nowhere near good enough. I'm looking at different players in the squad, and I'm looking at the likes of Barragan. You know, was a great fullback. Now I'm not sure he starts for any other club in the top two divisions of Spain. Gerard Gombao, I don't know how he's starting games for us. And you know, there's plenty more players who aren't good enough, and I think that's the bigger issue here. Fran Escriba was keeping us competitive, and me and I think most other Elche fans definitely backed him to turn it around. no matter how bleak it's looked this season. But the decision's made now. There is talk of other managers, seeing Paco MF, but the big one seems to be Hernan Crespo. He seems to be the favourite for the job, another Bragernic client. To me, I would back him if he joins, or I'll back anyone who joins, but I feel like if it is to be him or someone like him, it is such a big risk compared to Fran Escribá as most likely an unproven Argentinian manager coming into La Liga. Could be another Almirón. But that's my thoughts on the matter. And as always, siempre Elche.
Thanks, Keith. So, Rory, let's talk about replacements. I mean, a lot of the talk is about Hernan Crespo, obviously kind of a legendary player. What do you think of that speculation?
He's a manager that I really like. I have to say, I've seen his Defensa y Justicia side in Argentina, and I think that's where he had the most success, won the Copa Sudamericana with them. He also went to Sao Paulo, didn't work out quite as well for him, but I think the way he speaks, certainly, I mean, this is a very rough impression, but he's an option that I quite like. I do wonder with Bragarnik, did sort of a Koeman situation happen here where he brought Escribá in, did a job that was perhaps too good to sack him for, but never really quite believed in him, and so decided to get rid. For you, who are the other options, Sam?
Well, I mean, I'm going to turn up with my exclusive moment. A lot of speculation, with throwing some sound effects.
Exclusiva.
No, but I was just on a flight from London to Madrid. Naito Carranca was just in front of me. So when you WhatsApped me landing, and I was like, what do you mean that Fran Escribá has been sacked? My first thought was, Naito Carranca is two rows in front of me. I need to try and grab him and ask him if he's going to Elche. But no, I mean, I think for me, the Crespo link makes sense. I mean, obviously, the Elche have a lot of links to South America, to Argentina, so I'm sure they'll be very aware of what Crespo has done down there in Argentina and in Brazil. So I think that does seem to be kind of the leading candidate. Other name I saw was Javi Gracia. I guess after his time in Valencia, that could be an interesting one, but it's still very early days. I mean, the decision was only made on Sunday night, and so soon after the final whistle, it doesn't seem like it was one that's been planned out for a while. So I mean, I guess it'll be interesting to see Elche in the next few weeks. I mean, another coach who was under pressure not so long ago was Javi Calleja, but I mean, results have started to come through for Alaves, and we already touched on their draw with Sevilla from the Sevilla point of view. But I mean, this was a really good result for Alaves, wasn't it? To go to the Bithuan, pick up a point, score two goals. I mean, not many teams can do that.
Definitely. I think Alaves, for me, are the most impressive job by a manager thus far in the league. Because if you look at the midfield and the attack that he's setting out with, okay, you've got Hossalu, but Tony Moya, Mamadou Loom, that's their first season in La Liga. Edgar Mendes has played sort of half of a full season as a starter. And then you've got Luis Rioja and Pere Pons. Pere Pons did have two full seasons starting for Girona, and Luis Rioja has had a season starting in La Liga with Alaves. These aren't experienced, sort of proven La Liga players. They aren't players that have sort of been around and done it before. These are players that are coming and are for their sort of first go. And I'm not saying they're coming from nowhere. Tony Moya, as you mentioned, is former Atleti B player. Mamadou Loom comes from Porto. But yeah, this isn't a great squad. If you look at the Elche squad, there's a lot more quality there than there is in the Alaves one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the few experienced players they do have is Victor Laguardia, who keeps coming up with the important goals this season. I mean, the win over Elche that we mentioned earlier, he got the assist in that one. He got the winner against Atleti, the opener in this one against Sevilla. So I mean, Calleja has got the kind of star players, so to speak. I mean, Victor Laguardia, star player, maybe not, but he has got them performing, and there's just not a huge deal of talent in that squad. So for me, Calleja is doing a great job. And another coach who's come in with a difficult job is Quique Sanchez Flores and Getafe with a 4-0 win over Cadiz this weekend. So let's hand over to you now, Rory, as you spoke to Billy Monday, who's one of our guys who's usually in Cordoba, but he was in Madrid this weekend. So He was at the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez to see Getafe demolish Cádiz in perhaps the surprise result of the weekend.
Hacia la parte derecha, Alan Barry que va a cometer el centro, pone otra buena pelota, qué balón, el remate, gol. Gol, 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 Dunal. Gol.
Otra vez el gol.
Del Getafe. Vaya pase absolutamente maravilloso de Mauro Ambarri y salta en Esunal completamente solo para apuntillar al Cádiz el tercero del cuadro azulón.
Yes, I'm joined by Billy Monday, who works for Marca as a colleague of Sam's. Billy, thank you for coming on the podcast and welcome on your sort of first time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all ours. We have got a sort of live witness of Getafe's 4-0 win. They don't come around too often at the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez against Cádiz and what was billed as quite a six-pointer this early in the season. But what did you make of the game in general, Billy, and what were your sort of main takeaways from it?
Well, I don't really know what a team with one win in the last 13 league games is supposed to look like, but it's really not the team I saw at the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez today. I mean, the Getafe, I mean, first half, they got a really early goal, which helped them a lot. Confidence seemed such a major factor with them, especially at home. You know, a slow start, it can get a bit nervy when you're at home to one of your relegation, supposedly relegation rivals. But a seventh minute header from Matias Oliveira, really, really powerful, kind of a story of the game, really. It set the tone for, you know, 50-50s being won. He kind of clattered one of the Cadiz defenders at the back post to meet across and head it in. And from there, Cadiz kind of got a foothold in the game, but they did have possession, but they really looked threatening. And certainly Jorge Cuenca's second goal about midway, or about on the hour mark, another header from a set piece this time, that kind of really helped Getafe settle and then build on what they already had. I mean, the fans were really, really up for the game. There were chants of, you know, si se puede, yes we can, really referring to such a terrible start they had, and that yes we can now get out of a relegation scrap that we're almost certainly in. But if they play like they did today for all of the rest of their home games, and they have support like they did today, then I mean, I don't see why they can't. Kike Sanchez Flores seems to have got the whole squad kind of going. For that seventh minute goal, it was already met by, you know, substitutes running off out the bench and onto the touchline, just jumping in the air. One of the Getafe subs ran on, I think it might have been for the third goal, Enes Unal, another header. In fact, he kind of ran over to celebrate with the whole team. It may have been the fourth goal, actually. Jaime Mata scored in stoppage time, and they kind of celebrated in the actual net, really kind of pumping it, you know, getting the fans going, shaking the net and screaming. So it was quite a spectacle. It was kind of, everyone felt as if they were as one, fans, players, manager, coaching staff. So it was really impressive, and I don't really know what they had been doing or what was going wrong in the first few games of the season under Michel, but that's in the past now, it seems, and they're kind of building for a new.
Yeah, and you mentioned Kike Sanchez Flores, and they obviously moved from one former manager to another from Michel. Michel, for me, I think he tried to sort of make Getafe a much more attractive, in inverted commas, that's obviously a subjective term, but attractive side, keeping the ball a bit more. What are the sort of hallmarks of Kike Sanchez Flores' Getafe, or what did you see them kind of try and do today against a Cádiz team which is pretty well renowned for their style?
I mean, more than anything tactical, I mean, it seems to be more belief. There's a lot of kind of high-fiving and patting each other on the back when, you know, someone's made a clearance or shepherded the ball out of play. So a lot of it has been belief, because I know before Michel was trying a back three a little bit, and he's kind of interchanging between back three and back four. But Kike Sanchez Flores seems to have settled on his back three, and he's got them pretty well organised. And so they are kind of working as a unit now. They don't want to have possession, it seems like. Cadiz, a team really renowned not to enjoy having the ball, but they did have large spells of it in the first half. But Etafe really didn't look like, you know, giving anything away. They were really confident, lots of belief. He's just very, very calming figure, isn't he, Kike Sanchez Flores? So it must be quite good to play under him. Quite reassuring.
Football is un estado de ánimo. It's a sort of state of emotion, in the words of Jorge Valdano. And I just wanted to quiz you, because Getafe 4-0, we don't often see them score that many goals. And I think myself, like many others, have had doubts about their abilities in the striking department. Enes Unal scored again today. 4 goals in his last 4 games. Jaime Mata got on the score sheet. Just, again, sort of based on your impressions, do you think they have enough up front to stay up and to make the difference?
Well, they're going to have to if they are going to stay up. I mean, there's not too many goals hanging around in that team anymore, other than, well, there's not too many goals in their front line either, but that is, can they score enough goals to kind of get them to 40 points and win them enough games to get the 40 points? We'll wait and see. Enes Unal, Jaime Mata. I mean, Mata came off the bench, I think, today, and because the whole group is kind of seems to be together. There's no kind of sulking or anything like that. So he came off the bench really energetic, really got the crowd going. Lots of let's get this straight. The Cadiz were really not very good. So any striker, I suppose, is going to have a confidence builder against anyone. It might be Cadiz at the moment. So Enes Unal, Jaime Mata, if they can keep this kind of form going, the next 4 games, actually, 3 of them are against, well, teams you might suspect to be in a relegation battle, and Osasuna doing well. But they've got Mallorca and Alaves as well coming up, both away, actually. So if they can get those 2 strikers and get goals in those games, and if they can contribute towards at least draws or wins, then, you know, they definitely build on that for the rest of the season, give them belief that they can go on and get to that 40 point march that I'm sure they're aiming for. There's, you know, absolutely no question about that. But home games, definitely they'll have that backing from the crowd. Away games is where it's going to be won or lost, I think.
Certainly, it looks like it's going to be tight and tense at the Coliseum all season. They do look like they are in for the long haul in terms of that battle. But I shall throw it back to Sam, and thank you very much for your time, Billy. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers for that, Billy, and thanks, Rory, as well. So let's move on now to our final section of the week. So let's talk about the MVP for this weekend. I mean, some unexpected heroes, I suppose you could say, in some cases. I mean, Rory, who was one of your best picks from this weekend?
For me, Toni Kroos did a really great job, and that is not an unexpected pick, but he was at his sort of metronomic best. He provided 2 assists this week, and it's very easy to get used to how good these players are. Toni Kroos, again, he's not sort of the flashiest player in the world, but he's just so good at everything he does. Everything is so precise, and I think he probably does go a bit underappreciated just for that simple fact that he's not always scoring goals or providing these sort of dramatic bits of play. But having someone who's so reliable and so reliably good is invaluable to Real Madrid and to any side.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of the elite player there, wasn't he? I mean, that's the Toni Kroos we know and love. And after his injury at the start of the season, it's taken him a while to get going, but I think we saw the best of him against Granada. My pick is going to be another midfield general, so to speak, that we've already discussed, but a very different kind of player. Toni Moya came from Atleti B to Alaves in the summer on a free transfer. I mean, he was playing in Segunda B, the third tier last season. And I think with each passing game, he seems to get better. He seems to settle in more to Calleja's team, to Alaves' style. And I think he just looks more and more at home in Primera. I mean, it was his corner for La Guardia's header to open the scoring. I mean, it was a perfect corner. It was kind of the ideal centre-back dream of kind of pinged in just the right height, the right speed, far post, and for La Guardia, he had it on a plate. But I mean, Tony Moya, I mean, he's just one of those players who maybe you don't notice him in the same way as Tony Kroos. He's not going to be creating chance after chance, but he just keeps things ticking in midfield. And with Alaves and the squad they have, I mean, you touched on it before and kind of the players they have, he's really kind of taking up a leadership role, even though he's only 23 and he's the youngest of the ones that started in midfield at the weekend. I think he's still kind of shining more than Pere Pons, who's got much more Primera experience. I think he's kind of elite roots, his background at Atleti, that kind of thing is starting to shine through from time to time, and I think this was one of those performances where he's really kind of establishing himself as a Primera player, so he's my shout. What about you then, Rory? Who's your second pick?
For me, I'm going for a similar sort of, maybe not type of midfielder, but another sort of midfield general, someone who bosses it, and that is Mauro Arambari, who's a firecracker of a player. I think most people who see him love to watch him because he's kind of all over the place. Typical Garacho Charua of any Uruguayan player that you tend to see in La Liga. And his, I think he missed a game 3-4 weeks ago for Getafe, and it was just as if the sort of air and energy had gone out of this Getafe side because he provides so much of it. And it's not just to say that he's an enforcer, because he is all over the park. He's very effective at breaking things up, intercepting, tackling, not afraid to foul either. But he does have the quality as well to sort of provide assists as he did today. And he's just a really good player. And you can see why Bordalas was so keen to bring him to Valencia this summer, even though he couldn't get the deal done.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's the thing with Arambari, is that people think of him as kind of a tough tackling midfielder. But I mean, on Sunday, created 5 chances. He had 85% pass accuracy. I mean, this was much more than just a defensive midfield kind of performance. And so I think we've got 3 midfield generals already. So it's only fair that we add in a bit of flair with our final pick. So I'm going to go for Yannick Carrasco. I mean, I don't think we had any outstanding attacking performances this weekend. I think Betis had a couple of good ones. Nabil Fakir, maybe they could have been in there. But for me, Yannick Carrasco was the kind of player that changed the game. I mean, he didn't necessarily get the goal. I mean, that was obviously Felipe's late winner. But Carrasco was a constant thorn in Osasuna's side. I mean, he just so energetic, so much pace, so much drive up and down that left flank. And I mean, we saw some of his skills. I mean, turning players inside out, inside the box. I mean, this is exactly what Yannick Carrasco can be at his best. And I think for a long time, Atleti were kind of just throwing crosses into the box against Osasuna, but Yannick Carrasco was the one player who was trying to do something a bit different, a bit more dynamic. And that's what Atleti are all about in this kind of new Atleti that Diego Simeone has built. So I think for me, it wasn't the best team performance from Atleti. You can't compare that to Getafe, Real Madrid or Alaves, the other picks, but for an individual performance and inspiring a team to keep going, I would say Yannick Carrasco is definitely up there. So that's our 4 picks then. So make sure you check out our Twitter on Monday and get your votes in for the MVP for Matchday 14. So just before we finish, Rory, what would be your moment of the weekend?
For me, I am sticking at the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez, and it's Jaime Mata, who scored an absolutely gorgeous volley. I think it was his first goal in, I forget exactly how many it was, they said on the commentary, but it's 22, 23 games.
Yeah, I think March was his last goal.
Yeah, just an insane sort of release of emotion from him afterwards. He goes into the net and then he's sort of rippling it, and you could really see the anger and frustration coming out of him. And yeah, it was nice to see him striking the ball that way again, because it's easy to forget that he was a really good goal scorer for Jose Bordalas, and at Getafe's peak in Europe, he was leading the line as effectively as anyone in the league.
Yeah, and his 100th goal in professional football as well, so I imagine being, what was that, from March to November, that long wait for the 100th goal must have been torturing for him. But my pick is going to be, I think it has to be a late winner. I don't think you can ignore an 87th minute winner.
Only natural.
And obviously Atletico Madrid, that's where my affection lies. So I think for me, I mean, especially for Felipe, I mean, he's had a lot of criticism of late, and I've been the first to criticise him more often than not as well. I don't think he's anywhere near he was when he was at his best a couple of years ago. So for him to get that that header at the death, I mean, it was very much kind of bombardment of the Osasuna goal for much of that game. And it was the kind of game where we've seen Atleti 2 or 3 years ago drop points. And so to get that winner, I think it meant so much more necessarily than just the goal itself or the 3 points on this occasion. So I think that was a huge moment, and not just for in terms of this weekend, but in terms of the whole season. I think that can really help Atleti to keep kicking on and provide that title challenge. And I think they are one of the few teams that can rival Real Madrid, as we said. So I think it'll be interesting to see. So let's head out with that commentary. So thank you for joining us, Rory.
No problem. The narrative god strike again with Felipe.
It's always the way, isn't it? After he messes up with Anfield, he had to come back at the Metropolitano with a fantastic late winner. So let's listen to that. Thanks for listening to us. Make sure you stay tuned across the week. We've got Champions League action, Europa League action, everything will be covered on our Twitter. We'll also have some new blogs. We've got a new post up this week on Jeremy Pino and a player profile of him, his journey and what lies ahead for him. And then we'll be back again next weekend after another action-packed weekend of La Liga football. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
Mira, Felipe.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.